everyone. We're from the UBC Food Society.
Yummy.
And we're the only food club at UBC.
We're about feeding students, but also teaching them how to feed themselves. Through our restaurant outings and cooking workshops, we hope to expose you guys to the diversity of cultures, flavors, and food communities Vancouver has to offer.
So if you want to get involved, email us at foodsociety@gmail.com or check up on our website at www.ams.ubc.ca/clubs/foodsociety, or you can even join our Facebook group.
Hey there.
Barev.
We're the Armenian Students Association, and we're here to bring together everyone,
Armenians and non-Armenians,
who are interested in learning about the Armenian culture here at UBC.
Find us on Facebook at ASAUBC to stay up to date. We look forward to seeing you at our future events.
I've been really trying.
Do you like laughing, hilarity, radical thought-provoking creativity, and laughing? UBC Improv is UBC's home for improvisational comedy, theater made up on the spot. Like us on Facebook to learn when our next shows are. Search for us on YouTube for our film sketches. And follow us on Twitter because we want the followers. UBC Improv. Insert cheesy slogan here.
Let's get it on. Sugar.
We're the Daves. I'm David Bedenick.
I'm Dave Campbell.
I'm Dave Frank.
We're the Daves.
And you're listening to CITR FM 101.9.
CITR Radio.
And these are the Daves of our lives.
It is Friday, the 19th of February, 2016, and this is Dave Radio with Radio Dave on the radio. We're broadcasting live on CITR 101.9 FM and streaming on the World Wide Web at CITR.ca from our studios underlooking the Agora of the Palatial Student Nest on the Musqueam territory of Auxen, better known to you as the Point Grey campus of the University of British Columbia. On the program today, Post Secret, the show, opened its return engagement last night at the Fire Hall. We'll talk about this worldwide phenomenon with one of the people who helped bring it to the stage, Vancouver's own PJ Daw. And we'll also hear about Last of the Red Hot Lovers, a classic Neil Simon play getting a new look starting next week at Studio 16, and ZZ Theatre presenting a stage reading of First Lady, a new play by Eric Fraser Gow, and we'll talk to Eric later on today too. Plus, lots of local music and a look at what's on around town this weekend. It's Vancouver's go-to hour for local independent theatre, film, and music, and it starts right now. Don't touch that dial. All right, our guests are here, but we're going to play a little bit of music first. Our throwback tune is from the mid-80s. Dr. Bruce Archibald is an associate with the Entomology Department of the Museum of Comparative Zoology at Harvard. He's the founding president of the Vancouver Paleontological Society, and he's also a founding member, along with Ray Kondo, Ken Jones, and Naomi Moriyama, of the Secret V's, a seminal punk band from the 80s in Vancouver. We're going to hear a tune from that Bruce recorded with Chris Houston around 1986 called When You Live Like This, right after this track from the Secret V's, Waiting for the Drugs to Take Hold.
relics of the Great Repression. Staccato lies in the upper succession. And I still don't know just who to blame. Well, if she's so smart, why ain't she insane? Now I'm just waiting for the drugs to take hold. Now, darling, I'm just waiting for the drugs to take hold. I'm just waiting for the drugs to take up, darling. I'm just waiting to relinquish control. Well, I don't know, but I've been told they say the streets up in heaven are lined with gold. I feel those streets, they are the coming of a post. You know, I went and exceeded the recommended dose. Now I'm just waiting for the drugs to take hold. Now, darling, I'm just waiting for the drugs to take hold. I'm just waiting for the drugs to take up, and I'm just waiting to relinquish control. Well, I saw you through the window painted black. You know I pressed against the pane, but I just fell back. Now I hear the ticking of the kitchen clock. You know the sounds just keep on coming out there. Just waiting for the drugs to take hold. Now, darling, I'm just waiting for the drugs to take hold. Now, I'm just waiting for the drugs to take. Oh, darling, I'm just waiting to relinquish control.
When you live like this, and you start to cry, it won't go away. And if it does, in a week or two, it just comes back the same anyway. You start to wonder if you got the strength to do it all over again. Never forget why you live like this. Never forget why.
No, that's not a bagpipe. That's Chris Houston on his soprano sax. But that's a great tune by Bruce A. from, oh my God, 1986, I think, something like that. Anyway, TJ Dawes in the studio. Hi there.
Hello.
Hi. Thanks for coming. I always have to turn on the mic or else people won't hear you. So
I'm a stage performer, and yet I have a soft speaking voice.
Yeah.
I mumble and I swallow my voice. It's a bizarre contradiction that is my life.
That's how it works. That's why we have these microphones. Anyway, you are involved with a show that I went to see last night, Post Secret, the show, that is really quite, it's quite a phenomenal piece of theater.
Oh, thank you very
much. Yeah. And it grew out of a, basically a kind of a community art project.
Yeah, that became an internet phenomenon.
Yeah.
So when I tell people that I'm involved in a show based on Post Secret, there's one of two reactions. Either there's a blank stare because they've never heard of it.
Yeah.
Or their jaw hits the floor because they've been into Post Secret for years and they go on the blog every Sunday. So what Post Secret is just a guy in suburban Washington, D.C., who had this idea to have people send him secrets anonymously on postcards, and it went viral.
Yeah.
And he's since received more than 1 million of them. And he posts about 22 to 24 on the blog, postsecret.com, every Sunday. Mm-hmm. And people just go to this regularly and religiously. And for the show, what we've done is we've taken a bunch of these postcards and we project them up on a screen, and then we take emails and internet comments and have actors speak those. So it's a collage, you know. It's not a play. We don't have characters. We don't have a set. We don't have an arc for a given character. We don't extrapolate on who a given person is. We just present things people have said, either this is my secret or this is my response to somebody else's secret.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's created this whole kind of support structure.
Yeah.
You know, this whole community has grown out of this. How long has it been around? When did he first start it?
He started the art
project. Anyway, we're talking about, his name is
Frank Warren.
Frank Warren, okay.
Yeah, he started the art project in 2004 and then founded the blog in 2005. Mm-hmm. And he's been making a living doing this since pretty much 2005.
Yeah.
He tours. He does speaking engagements. I've seen him perform at the Chan Center
just
a few years ago. The biggest audience for Post Secret is young people, generally college students. And there's been 6 best-selling books. And, yeah, it's a phenomenon. It's crazy. It's out there. And a very interesting thing that he did, which is kind of connected to his experience as a volunteer operator on the suicide hotline, is he just understood from the start that what people need is just a place to say what they need to say. So resist the impulse to fix somebody's problem.
Yeah.
You know, that's what he learned as a Hopeline operator.
Yeah, there's a line that actually a quote of his own from one of his speeches where he talks about listening, and letting them talk, and he said, like, you know, we talk about one conversation where he let somebody talk for like 15 minutes before they finally got to what they really wanted to talk about.
That's right, and there can be tremendous healing in just saying, "I hear you."
Yeah,
just as simple as that. So when he founded the blog, he didn't allow commenting. Sometimes people send in emails to him, and sometimes he'll take those emails and put them up, interspersing some of the postcards with them. Mm-hmm. But he always makes sure it's never an email that attacks the person who wrote the postcard or makes fun of them in any way.
Yeah.
So it's this safe space where anybody can say what they need to say without feeling that they're going to be judged or mocked, which is rare on the internet.
Yeah.
So we try to cultivate that with the stage show.
Oh, I know. It's a minefield.
Oh, yeah, exactly. If you put yourself out there in any way, and Frank has been attacked extensively on the internet. Basically, everybody who's in public on the internet has been attacked in some way. Mm-hmm. So Post Secret is different. You know, he cultivates this safe space. No one will be attacked here.
So tell me about how you got involved with this.
There's a Vancouver guy who actually used to work at UBC booking acts for some of the theaters here. And he's an agent, and he represents a good friend of mine, Charlie Ross, who is doing a one-man show this weekend at the Waterfront Theater, One Man Dark Knight, a Batman parody. Charlie's first show was One Man Star Wars, and I co-created that with him. His second show was One Man Lord of the Rings. Very accessible, very popular. Mm-hmm. Justin Suds, this agent, saw him, liked him, signed him. Saw my work, my autobiographical solo shows. Most of what I do is my own work.
Yeah.
Saw my stuff, liked it, but thought it's not sellable in the same way Charlie's shows are.
Right.
But he knew he wanted to work with me. Then years later, he came up with this idea. What if somebody turned a blog into a stage show? What would that be like? What blog would that be? His wife turned him on to Post Secret. Then he thought, maybe I can get TJ to help me write it. So he told me about it. I'd never heard of it. I went to the bookstore. I bought one of the books, brought it home, and I was in tears within pages.
Oh, yeah.
Just the authenticity and the power of the secrets that people would write just hit me right in the heart, and I thought, yeah, I really want to work on this.
Mm-hmm.
So we brought another guy on board, Khalil Ashanti, and then the three of us approached Frank Warren through his agent, and then Frank was, surprisingly enough, open to three obscure Canadians working on a stage show with him because he wanted to be involved.
Yeah.
He had fielded offers in the past of people from Hollywood, people from Broadway who wanted to do it. But what they wanted was to get him to sign a piece of paper and accept a check, and then they could do whatever they wanted with him. Whereas it's his baby.
Yeah.
He wants to be involved, and he's very involved in every step. And I'm in communication with him all the time about this.
Mm-hmm. And so this played at the Fire Hall a year ago, and it's,
right.
since then it's been on tour. So where are some of the places you've been to with this?
There's a U.S. cast of this. So we rehearsed in Charlotte, North Carolina, mm-hmm. and then opened in Hartford, and then Schenectady, New York, and College Station, Texas, where Texas A&M is, and Atlanta, and then South Florida, and then it's about to have dates in the Midwest. And then the tour is going to finish in Washington State. So the final performance is going to be in Bellingham on Saturday, April 2nd.
Uh-huh.
So it's all over the place.
Yeah.
And there's probably going to be more touring. There's a production in Toronto for a week in early May, and there's probably going to be a cross-Canada tour with that same cast in September.
It's the first theater event I've been to in a long time where they have a Kleenex box at the door.
We've been told that Kleenex would make a good sponsor
for
the show. There's some heartbreaking moments.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think there's a moment where somebody isn't touched by things that come up, because it is so personal, and it does affect everyone in different ways.
And the main theme of the show, which is explicitly stated multiple times, is you are not alone.
Yeah.
So whatever secret you have, there's other people that have that same secret. So there's a sequence when we play voicemails. You know, people keep voicemails of people they loved who've died.
Mm-hmm.
And we play a bunch of those.
That's my phone.
Yeah. That's, maybe it's somebody you know who died.
Could be.
From the past. Don't delete my voicemail. So we play a bunch of these, and a lot of people say that they relate to it. A lot of people have told me after the show that they do that too.
Yeah.
That's one of the big tear-jerking moments. And yet, as much as there's heartbreaking stuff in the show, there's also silliness.
Yeah.
And I'm really proud of that those two things can coexist quite peacefully. There's a segment on suicide, you know, mm-hmm. when somebody's secret is that they felt unloved and unwanted and illegal, and they're going to jump off the Golden Gate Bridge, and there's all these messages from people saying, please don't jump. My friend jumped off the bridge, or I used to feel suicidal.
Yeah.
And it does get better. And then, you know, in the next breath, there's a secret about somebody having dumped someone because he didn't think farts were funny.
Yeah.
You know, like
I know you laugh and then you cry and then you laugh again.
Yeah,
and there's moments where you're sort of getting into the funny ones and then you get hit with something.
That's right.
And all of a sudden you're feeling guilty about laughing about the other ones.
But life is both of those things.
Yeah.
You know, and there's the full spectrum. And sometimes life does take a sudden turn. Mm-hmm. Sometimes on your happiest day, you're hit with really bad news.
Yeah.
Sometimes when you're totally distraught and heartbroken, you find yourself belly laughing because you need it more than anything else that day.
Yeah. And you invite audience participation. I really enjoy that too, because everyone, there's a place for people to write their own secrets that you actually read out to the audience after the intermission.
Yeah, I'm quite proud of that too, because it's voluntary audience participation. Nobody has to stand up and sing.
Yeah.
You know, nobody who doesn't want to participate doesn't have to. Before the show or during intermission, people can write their secrets. We read some of them out in Act 2 of the show. We also scan all the secrets we get, and we put them up on the Fire Hall Art Center's Flickr account so anybody can read them.
Mm-hmm.
And then we also have whiteboards. So people who would like to remove the anonymity from the process, too, can write down the secret on a whiteboard and get their picture taken.
Yeah.
And those become part of the show as well. So there's this sense, on the one hand, it helps the show be at least a little bit different every single night. And on the other hand, everybody who's there is a part of the show, which I think is part of theater anyway, because it's interactive, whether there's a fourth wall or not. But everybody who's there has a chance to be a part of the overall project, to contribute to it, to say, this is my secret, and have it be read out. And that's actually my favorite part of the entire show. It's just that feeling in the audience when we're reading the audience's secrets, of just knowing that these words that I'm hearing right now could be written by the person next to me.
Yeah.
They could be written by somebody in this room.
Yeah. It does. It gives it that safety, too. People are afraid to go to a show that has audience participation because they don't want to be called on.
That's right.
But this gives you give total power of how much of yourself is going to be revealed.
And if you don't want to participate, you don't have to.
Yeah.
And there's no pressure to do so. And I really like that too. And I think that's one of the things theater has to offer. Like, I got my degree in theater 20 years ago. And since then, I've been hearing many people repeatedly tell me that theater is dying or theater is dead.
Mm-hmm.
And it hasn't died yet. And I think one of the things that theater has going for it that we need more and more in the world today is interactivity.
Yeah.
Because we're very isolated. And, you know, we still have the communal experience going to a movie. But a movie is the same time, it's the same every time it screens. The actors on the screen aren't affected by whether the audience is into it or not. Same with the TV show. You know, lots of people have conversations about what TV shows we're watching, or we don't want to put spoilers because we're all watching the same shows at the same time. And that's fine. But again, the show is the same, no matter what my reaction to it is.
Yeah.
But a play of any kind is at least a little bit different every time you perform it. And some radically different every time. And emotions are contagious. So people's normal interaction with PostSecret is online, so it's either solitary or maybe with one other person. But suddenly you're in a room with 50 people or 150 people, and you're feeling joy together, you're feeling laughter together, you're feeling heartbreak together, and it amplifies. And that accentuates the theme that you're not alone, because suddenly nobody is.
Yeah. It's at the Fire Hall. It opened last night. How long does it go till?
Plays until Saturday, March 5th.
Oh, so you got a couple of weeks, but I'm sure it'll sell out. So,
check it out. It brings in an audience that doesn't normally come to theater, which is very pleasing to me.
Yeah.
We always ask how many people have never been in this building before, and hands always go up.
Interesting.
And this happened at the Run last year.
Yeah.
The audience size grew and grew and grew, and we were playing to sell out houses, which is why it's back this year.
Right.
So, yeah, get your tickets early.
Definitely. Well, TJ Daw, thanks very much for dropping by.
Thanks for having me.
All right.
Your love, oh, and it won't be
That's Alia Ray and a tune called Lancaster, and we heard Wooden Horseman before that. And their Wooden Horseman's new CD just came out too, so we'll keep an eye out for that. Don't forget, you're listening to Dave Radio with Radio Dave on the radio, CITR 101.9 FM. Don't forget, our annual fund drive is coming up at the end of the month. This year, we are raising money to help our training programs and build a whole new generation of broadcasters and podcasters and all the rest. So keep your ears tuned to 101.9 FM. Go to CITR.ca for more information. Get your friends together and throw a few bucks our way, and you'll be rewarded for it. So sitting across from me now is Alexis Kellum-Creer. Hello.
Hi, Dave. How are you?
I'm well, thanks. How's yourself?
Excellent, thank you.
Good. Now, you are co-producing this production of Last of the Red Hot Lovers.
This is true.
That's coming up next week at Studio 16. Now, Last of the Red Hot Lovers, it's a Neil Simon play from the 60s, isn't it?
1969.
Yeah.
It opened on Broadway. And it had a pretty good run on Broadway, and they actually made a film out of it a couple of years later with Alan Arkin. Mm-hmm. But it hasn't really been it's done the circuit in community theater, but yeah. In Greater Vancouver, we couldn't find a listing for it that had been done for about 40 years.
Yeah, I think I saw that one.
And it really?
Yeah.
Where
I saw it at Presentation House.
No kidding.
In like 1979 or 1980 or something like that. Yeah. When I was doing theater reviews for Co-op Radio.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing. Yeah, and we're kind of mystified about it. There's sort of an outbreak of these sort of throwback comedies like Boing Boing and things that are being revived on Broadway and finding tremendous success.
Yeah.
And then sometimes coming to the Stanley to hear at the Arts Club. Mm-hmm. And
yeah, Odd Couple's another one.
Yeah, for sure. And so we kind of felt like... it's time for this show.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So what's the story? Who is the Last of the Red Hot Lovers?
The Last of the Red Hot Lovers is a seafood restaurateur named Barney. Yeah. And he's arriving in middle age. And this is the peak of the sexual revolution. And he's sort of looking around at all these people embracing all this romantic freedom and thinking, oh, like why? I want to live out a fantasy. I'm going to live out something that's spectacular, that's not like anything else. Everything else in my life, I think he says at one point, has been nice. And can I just grasp for something else?
Yeah.
So he's trying to inject some adventure and some excitement in this whole revolution that's happening. So he sets up a series of romantic trysts at his mother's apartment. Which, I mean, it's a natural meeting place for a romantic
He makes sure mom's
tryst.
Not there, though, right? Yeah.
He only has a couple of hours in the afternoons before his mother comes back from her volunteer work. So it's all on a very tight schedule in which he can pack all this sexual abandon that he plans to encounter with these women. So he sets up three meetings with these women. And... encounters some obstacles with each of them due to sort of conflicting ideas about what's going to happen and what's expected. And it's a really interesting arc for Barney from the beginning to the end of the show, and also for each of the women. So for each of the three scenes, it's quite a wonderful arc to watch as they arrive and as the two interact, sort of how, again, those conflicting expectations start to work around each other. And it's a gorgeous and funny look at human connection and the connections that aren't quite made and that are missed and that maybe bring you to something new.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why not? So let's talk about who's in it. Paul Herbert is playing Barney.
Paul Herbert is playing Barney.
I couldn't think of a better choice.
We thought so too.
Yeah.
There was a lot of great, great guys that came out to try for Barney, and Paul was just perfect.
Yeah.
He was just he has sort of the modesty and the physical comedy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that just comes so wonderfully to a gifted comic actor like Paul. It's just charm.
But very understated.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So there's no, you can't really, he does a good job of selling him as a non-Lothario, like someone who's really couldn't, if he tried, be threatening.
Yeah.
Not to give away, you know.
No, but especially if he tried.
It is a comedy.
Yeah, it sure is. And who are the women?
The women are Irene Karas-Lepper. Mm-hmm. It was fantastic. And we've seen a lot of Irene on Vancouver stages.
Yeah. I had the joy of working with her about five years ago now. It was at Theater Under the Stars.
Oh, yes.
In Anything Goes. And she just stole the stage every time she stepped on.
Yeah.
She's fantastic. Quite astonishing. Yeah.
Yeah. It's, we're very, very fortunate to have mm-hmm. Irene. My co-producer on the show is Nicola Rillette, uh-huh. who her notion of putting on this, she really wanted to do something that showcased women.
Yeah.
Women and the tremendous comic gifts that she'd seen around her that didn't always get play. And she thought, you know, this Neil Simon show would be such a fantastic showcase for these talents. So Nicola is the fantastically gifted comedian whose brainchild this all was. So she is featured in the show. And the third actress is Christine Bissonnette. We've not had the pleasure of seeing Christine a lot. But
yeah,
I don't think
I've come across her yet.
We're very excited to have her in the show as well. So, yeah, it's going to be fantastic. And our director is Ian Farthing, mm-hmm. Whose last show was the very much acclaimed ensemble show from last summer, Frost Nixon.
Oh, of course, yeah.
Yeah, that was Ian's last show, and we're very, very excited to have Ian on board as well. He's a fantastic director.
Marvelous. Yeah. So it's at Studio 16 at 7th and Granville.
Yes, it is.
So what are the dates?
We have a preview on the 23rd, opening on the 24th, and then our nightly, with the exception of February 29th through to March the 6th, we have two matinees on the Sundays, and there is a Pay What You Can on March the 1st.
And tickets?
Tickets at lovebirdartist.bpt.me, or you can just go to Brown Paper
Brown
Tickets.
Brown Paper, yeah. And there's a Facebook page, too, which we will put a link to on the Dave Radio page.
And we also have a promo code. Mm-hmm. If you go to Brown Paper Tickets and you enter Cashman, C-A-S-H-M-A-N, you will receive a $5 discount on your tickets. So get those now. We already have one sold-out show.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well done.
Thank you. We're excited.
That's very exciting.
Yeah.
All right. Well, have a great run.
Thank you so much, Dave.
And thanks a lot for coming in.
You bet. Thank you.
Thank you.
So that's Doug Andrew, Circus in Flames, and they are going to be performing tonight at Skinny Fat Jack's, which is in the back alley behind Slickety Jim's. Well, it's not in the back alley. The door is in the back alley. The bar is in the back of Slickety Jim's at 18th and Main. So that goes on tonight at 9 o'clock. And then if you miss that one, you can head out to New West tomorrow. They'll be playing at the Heritage Grill at 447 Columbia, which is just around the corner from the Columbia SkyTrain station, and that starts at 8 o'clock. But there's no cover charge for that one. So check out those two shows. Right now on the phone is Eric Gow. Hi, Eric.
Hey, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks for joining us. Eric is an actor and a musician and a writer, and you have just and a director too. And you've got it's a reading of a play that you've written coming up next week. So it's called, tell us all about it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's called First Lady, mm-hmm. and it was originally developed at Studio 58 through their solo show project. So I wrote and performed that. The play is about, well, funny enough, I started a couple years ago, so it was about the current American election going on now, and it was about the possibility of a gay candidate winning the national American elections, and the show actually follows the First Lady, who is a man named Charles Pritchard Morris, mm-hmm. Who's the husband of the newly elected President of the United States, and basically what happens with him in his time in the White House. So they've have to, of course, change the title from First Lady.
Yeah.
And it deals with some of the gender politics, the ideas of what it is to be in charge, also to be in those positions close to power and the respect that comes with it, whether it's a woman in the role or then also what happens on the other hand if it's a gay man.
Yeah, I mean it's an interesting concept because first of all we might have to see this happening anyway because if Hillary Clinton gets elected then Bill becomes first gentleman, and so it's one dynamic when you've got a straight couple.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
it's a whole other story when you've got a gay couple.
Mm-hmm. It's funny that you mention Hillary because that's where I got the original inspiration from the show. Mm-hmm. Was a couple years ago I was watching Barbara Walters' special on the the most interesting person of the year when she does the recap at the end just before New Year's. And Barbara Walters was asking her, what would they call Bill should she be the president? Should she get elected in the next election? And she said that she didn't know. She had no idea and somewhat dismissed the question. So I thought that would be a very interesting premise for a show, especially if someone who might have reason to think about it isn't actually thinking about it herself.
Mm-hmm.
So then I started going about just drafting up some ideas. And for me, the interesting question was less about, say, if Bill Clinton or a man took the role of First Lady in the White House, but what sort of dynamic would it create if a gay man was in the same position? And in terms socially, what would be the expectations from the public in terms of when you put a man in a female role, or at least traditionally as we view it, but then to sort of flip that on its head, but when a gay man is put in that role, it sort of creates a different dynamic because there's so many prejudices and ideas that come from that in a lot of cases. Sort of this equality between femininity and homosexuality with men.
Mm-hmm.
So that was something that I wanted to explore.
Yeah, because it's, well, what I guess what sort of what kind of differences would you see there?
Well, it's interesting because there really shouldn't be any differences.
That's what I mean.
And that's
I lost track of what I was going to ask now, and it just came back to me. is what kind of world have you put this in? Like, is it something where the fact that they're a gay couple is more more of an acceptable thing than it probably would be in our present reality? Or is it more in, you know, are those obstacles also involved in getting elected and dealing with the politics and the dynamics?
Mm-hmm. Well, what I've done with the play is sorry, I'm just blanking on the question again.
Yeah, it's a tough one, isn't it?
So the reality that I created for the play was trying to keep it as much in the world that we live in now.
Yeah.
But then having it that, as opposed to, say, Bernie Sanders running against Hillary Clinton.
Right.
So I did as much work as I can to create a full, fleshed-out world in the what could practically happen as I know America today that would get a gay man elected, because it still seems a thing that's a bit off. So for me, it was a matter of just creating a certain political climate and things of that sort. And I mean, personally, if you ask me, in the case of the Republican nominees at the moment, in some ways, does the Democratic Party some favors. And actually, something I addressed in the play, because a couple years ago, I always thought when writing, like, oh, I'm going to have to create some sort of very interesting Republican candidate who could possibly lose an election just on the basis of his own actions. And then Donald Trump came along, and actually that almost wrote itself.
That's right. Here's a gift for you.
it was one of those very happy accidents where I was, as it was getting closer, and then once the actual nominees came out for the Republican race, when I saw that, I was like, well, here we go. And then, of course, there's some extra things that I've had to add there. But my point was to not create a world that was unlike our own, but to actually explore what would be different. And for me, it's also the play doesn't focus on the administration itself very much, and it doesn't focus on the president and how he got elected. The play actually begins on the first day in office and then moves through the course of the administration.
Yeah.
And now it is a two-hander since it grew from a one-person show for me, because for me, a lot of it is also exploring the idea of women in power as well, and that contrast. And then I was also becoming very bothered by the fact that the only character in the show was a man. So I've actually included another character who works with Charles in the White House. And then there's also a dual character who was in the show the whole time in a sort of Shirley Valentine aspect. He was talking to the wall, because there's a room in the East Wing in the residence of the White House, which is called the Queen's Room, which is where the entirety of the play takes place. And it's traditionally used as a study for first ladies and has since it was built. Yeah. But the thing about it is the last major remodeling that happened within the White House, of that section at least, was done by Jackie Kennedy.
Oh, really?
Kennedy administration.
Yeah.
So during the entirety of the play, he's constantly talking to Jackie Kennedy. So he has a dialogue. So I have included that Jackie talks back now.
Yeah.
In some cases.
Wow. All right. So we're gonna see this as a staged reading.
It won't be staged. It'll be strictly a reading. Okay. Right now, it's still very much in developmental phase.
Right.
So the thing that I'm most excited about finding out now is seeing audience reaction,
yeah,
seeing what's being followed, what are the themes that are being picked up. And the one thing that I've loved about when I perform the show and every time I talk about it or I have a reading with some people just on my own,
mm-hmm,
is it really creates a dialogue. And then it's very interesting to get people's views and thoughts and opinions on things,
yeah,
because it is creating a scenario which isn't too far off, but, and funny enough, can be inflammatory in some ways, but everyone so far that I've talked to has an opinion and generally a strong opinion.
Yeah.
It's been great to explore that.
Oh, absolutely. All right, so we'll see it Thursday and Friday next week, February 25th,
yes,
and 26th, at the Playwrights Theater Center in Chinatown.
Absolutely, over at 739 Gore Avenue.
Okay, and what time does it start?
8 p.m. both,
okay,
nights, and it's,
yeah,
a pay what you can by donation.
Great. Well, thanks for taking the time to talk to us, Eric.
Absolutely, always a pleasure.
All right, talk to you soon.
We'll talk to you soon. Bye. Bye.
We're counting down the days till Fun Drive 2016. This year, our theme is growing our cultures, and it all starts on February 25th with a rad kickoff party in the Pit Pub and a week-long on-air telethon. Help your community station by donating so we can support training for volunteers and promote the multitude of cultures on our own airwaves. The online donation page is live now, so head on over to citr.ca/donate and get cool CITR swag.
Wow, we're almost done. That was great. We had a great show today. Now let's take a look at the call board. We've got a few auditions and calls for crews and staff and all kinds of stuff. So let's just get to it. Let's start right here at home. CITR is looking for a volunteer web content coordinator for Discorder Magazine. That job involves uploading and formatting the content on our WordPress website. You coordinate it with Discorder's editor, art director, and CITR's advertising coordinator to upload each new issue on the Discorder website. And if you want more information, the cutoff is today. So if you're interested in this position and you haven't applied yet, send an email right now to volunteer@citr.ca. We also have a paid job opening up for advertising coordinator, one of the people that the volunteer web content coordinator will be working with. Our current ad coordinator just got a great job, and so we have an opening for their replacement. The details are posted on our website, citr.ca. So check out that one. Remember, the Student Radio Society of the University of British Columbia is an equal opportunity employer, encourages applicants from underrepresented groups. So it is a great way to sort of get your foot in the door in the advertising and publishing world. Royal City Theatre Company is looking for Hollywood Golden Age lookalikes. They are doing a fundraising show for their company's youth mentorship program. So if you can do Charlie Chaplin or Mae West or Marilyn Monroe or Elvis or Clark Gable or anyone like that, and you're looking for a fund of fancy dress and improv, contact Ellie@rctheaterco.com as soon as possible. Theater in the Raw is having their auditions for their one-act play series, and that closes tonight. So contact Theater in the Raw at telus.net to find out more about that. Let's see. Rice and Beans Theater is looking for some actors for their play for the Revolver Festival. And that's happening in May. The auditions are on Sunday. There's also a production of Beowulf by Mark Castellini, the writer of Boeing Boeing. And that's happening next week. Let's see. Opera. Oh, Opera Opulenza is doing a production of Cavalleria Rusticana, which is a short opera, and they're looking for chorus members of all ranges, soprano, alto, tenor, and bass. So contact operaopulenza@gmail.com. Let's see. What else have we got here? A lot of these we've posted before, so we're running out of time. I want to make sure I get to the good ones here. Well, they're all good, but you know what I mean, the new ones. Oh, yes, the Beauty Shop Dolls. This is a female vocal group, and they're looking for a fourth member. They're kind of a female barbershop quartet, hence the term Beauty Shop Dolls. They do everything from 1920s jazz standards up through 50s and 60s pop, and so looking for someone who can fit into their crowd. The auditions are in March. Contact Beauty Shop Dolls, one word, .com. And the sidekick players are Jacqueline Keith, a good friend of the show, is doing a play called Looking by Norm Foster. And, that audition's in April, so don't even concern yourself about that. And that's our show. Thanks for spending your lunch hour with us. Remember, if you have a song that needs airplay, a show that needs audience, an audition that needs actors, a class that needs students, or a film shoot that needs background, we're here for you. Send details to DaveRadioPodcast@Hotmail.com, and please like us on Facebook. Special thanks going out to TJ Daw, Alexis Kellum Creer, and Eric Gao for being our guests on today's show. If you missed any or all of today's show and you want to relive glorious moments from the past, check out our podcast archive. At CITR.ca. And sports fans, we got Thunderbird basketball tomorrow. UBC versus the Westmen and Women of Winnipeg. The women's game's at 5, the men's game at 7 tomorrow, streaming on CITR.ca. Stick around, Eleanor and Erica are next with Femme Concept. And at 3:30, it's Nardwar, the human serviette. Dave Radio returns next week at this same time. Bye bye.
Station, we believe in playing content with artistic and cultural merit, and sometimes that category includes material which can be construed as offensive. For those who have children nearby or are sensitive to provocative material, the following broadcast may have strong language, themes, or be otherwise objectionable. Please consider tuning out and revisiting CITR after this program.
Nothing, really. Not very convincing, Jane girl. Whatever it is, I've got just the cure for it.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Did you know CITR has a women's collective?
This brand new collective is all about providing and fostering a community for women who are or who want to be in radio, fighting the gender disparity in media, and centering women's voices and issues. If you are a female-identified person or ally who's already involved in radio or wants somewhere to start, this collective is for you. Email womenscollective@citr.ca for more information and to get involved.
And tune in Friday at 6 p.m. for the collective show, Lady Radio, featuring music, interviews, events, news, commentary, basically anything we care to talk about.
See you then.
Well, how do you like it? There's only one word for it. Terrific.
CITR's annual fun drive is kicking off with a party at the Pit Pub in the Nest on February 25th at 6 p.m. There will be great bands and a raffle for rad prizes donated by AMS Events, Varsity Outdoor Club, and more. It's 19+, and tickets are available at the door for $5 or $3 with CITR membership. All proceeds go to Fun Drive to help support your campus radio station.
I said